From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in the aisles of a big box retail store, in the void of a robot-like supernatural being, and in a New York City apartment of a man and a woman who have long worked past their will-they-won't-they sexual tension because one of them is gay. This hour, we're talking about the year in television. Maybe you recognize the settings of three of this year's most popular shows, Superstore, The Good Place, and Will and Grace, all on NBC. Yes, a broadcast network. They are still in existence. But you can also see all three of these shows online and on streaming services. Forgive my sarcasm regarding network television. I'm a big fan. But we're also living in the era of Netflix and Hulu, where original series and binge watching have dominated how many of us consume television. In May, the Pew Research Center reported that nearly 97% of U.S. households have a TV set, yet only about a third of Americans say it would be very hard to give up their TV. So as more viewers cut the cord, so to speak, we're left with questions about the future of the medium. How will television consumption continue to change? Is appointment viewing going extinct? Or can networks reclaim the days of must-see TV? And what were the biggest TV successes and failures in 2018? My guests this hour help us answer those questions. Joining me in studio for the hour, Kate Sweeney, theater manager for Monroe Community College and organizer of Ambush Rochester, also a super TV fan. Welcome back to you, Kate.
Thank you. Well, good to be here today.
Eric Stevens is a comedy writer, also a big TV fan who did way more homework than I did for this hour. So thank you, Eric. Welcome.
Thank you.
Joining us on the phone is Bob Thompson. He's the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Welcome to you, Professor Thompson.
Thank you for having me.
And in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Edsel Love Patterson. He's a Rochester-based television and film actor who has a starring role in a new romantic comedy called His, Hers, and the Truth. And he'll have some inside information for us about what's going on in Hollywood right now. But before we talk to our guests, a word from news director Randy Gorbman.
Well, I'll tell you, Megan, I can't wait to listen to as much of this hour as I can today. And if I don't, I'm going to catch the podcast because this is a great topic. And again, you know, we certainly do a lot of important, difficult issues on Connections and a lot of fun topics that a lot of people are interested in, like this one today about TV cultures. A great panel of guests coming up in just a moment. To continue this kind of work and the kind of work that we do all year long in WXXI, we could use your help. We've got a one-day drive going on today to get your support. If you could just help us with whatever you can afford to close out the year on a very positive note for public broadcasting here in Rochester. The number to call is 454-6300, 454-6300. The toll-free number is 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994. Or you can just do it online at WXXINews.org. I want to mention, whatever you do pledge this hour will get doubled by a longtime member, Dee Molinari, a dollar-for-dollar match until 2 this afternoon. Dee has been a member, a very good friend of us at WXXI since 1984. So make your money count. Call right now, 454-6300, and thank you for your support.
Randy, quick, before you jump out, what was your favorite show of 2018?
Wow, that you really put me on the spot. You know, actually, I'm thinking of one of my favorite shows, which I don't know if they had a new season this year, but it's going to be on Netflix very soon again, Black Mirror. Actually, Veronica Volk and I are big fans of that. It's kind of like a slightly warped Twilight Zone type of show.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Randy.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And listeners, we want to hear about what your favorite shows are as well. You can join the conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email us at connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter, as many of you have this morning, talking TV at MMacMedia. Bob, I'd like to start with you. As someone who has studied the history of television, what stood out to you? What was remarkable in TV in 2018?
Well, my favorite show to come out in a long time is the show Atlanta from FX, and it went into its second season. And that brilliant, exquisite first season was even topped by the second season. And it was kind of, the year of Donald Glover. In May, he hosted Saturday Night Live. Then as Childish Gambino, he comes out with that extraordinary music video, This is America. Then the second season of Atlanta, he was in one of the Star Wars movies. And in 2019, he's going to be Simba. So it doesn't get much better than that.
A good year for him, for sure.
Yeah, I'll say.
I've read a lot about Atlanta, and I know, Eric Stevens, you've seen a couple episodes. Kate, have you seen Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay, so what I've read about the show is that it tackles a number of genres within the genre. So the episode I read about specifically, the Teddy Perkins episode. Has everyone...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I have a clip from that. And actually, Bob, if you don't mind setting this up for me, this is the scene in which Darius is being lured by Teddy to his mansion under the pretenses of acquiring a piano. It's very creepy.
Yes.
It has echoes of Get Out, echoes of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Tell us a little bit about what was happening in that episode. How
echoes
the character...
of Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Echoes of all kinds of things. Well, you pretty much set up all you need to know. What is most interesting about this episode is it's another example of how this show kind of becomes something different every single episode. It's a standard drama in one episode. One episode in the first season, the entire thing was done as a talk show of the kind you would see on the BET network. They have episodes when neither of the stars are in the episodes. They have flashbacks, and this happened to be their little delving into the horror genre. And it's essentially about going into this house to get a piano, but it becomes something much, much creepier.
All right, let's give it a listen.
You know, not all great things come from great pain. Sometimes it's love. Not everything's a sacrifice.
Sacrifices are necessary, Darius.
Maybe. But your dad should have said sorry. I'm sorry. I went through daddy shit myself. When you're young, you try to just make it be okay and say everything's gonna be fine, and that's just, you don't know the difference, but that don't give you an excuse to grow up and repeat the same over and over. It's like there's this what-if factor. What if you would have been great at something else? Or if you would have seen love instead of all the other like Stevie?
I'm sorry?
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie had his own sacrifices. He was blind.
Yeah, but he wasn't blinded. He saw through his music.
That's beautiful, but wrong. Benny! You're alive!
So granted, you're not seeing the visuals here, but the dialogue itself, I think, is really compelling. And we learn throughout the episode that Teddy Perkins, the man who had the higher pitched voice, and Benny Hope, who was the character who just came in when Teddy said, "Benny, you're alive," they're two brothers who shared a musical past. They had an abusive father. And Eric, have you seen this episode?
I have not seen this episode.
But you've seen the show.
Yes.
And I'm not sure where it stands in the context of the whole show, but does this define what Atlanta is? Bob, Kate, you can jump in as well. How does this episode stack up to what the rest of the season was for you?
This does seem very familiar to me. This is Donald Glover. This is clearly Donald Glover's voice. This could have been just taken directly out of an interview, not a script of his TV show. And that is what we're finding on TV. A lot of these shows are ripped directly from the creators or the actors or the writers' lives, and they're not playing characters so much anymore, or they're playing extreme versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Kate?
Yeah, I believe that it represents the show Atlanta and all the different themes that it tries to bring. I feel like it has a little bit of a Wire-esque feel to it, and kind of showing us different aspects of people's lives and things like that. One of my favorite shows this year was Pose, and I felt like that was one of the kind of this flawed character, you know, like where we're really looking into different parts of society. Maybe they are like very much on the outskirts, but they have their own individual problems within those outskirt areas that they live in.
Well, Pose made the list of best shows of 2018 from the New York Times. Have to admit, I haven't seen that show, but it looks really fun. Is it a fun show or is it dark?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's a fun show because, you know, there's a lot of extravagance and things, but it also tells the tale of kind of a society made from being in the outskirts of society and what that brings. I mean, I feel like it tells a story that hasn't been told on television before. Mm. And I mean, Billy Porter is nominated for a Golden Globe for it, for his character Pray Tell. the lead character in the show, which is a trans actor, MJ Rodriguez, is just absolutely phenomenal and portrays his character so amazingly well and really tells a story of 1980s gay culture that I feel like even a lot of, you know, LGBTQ people don't necessarily even know that portion of the society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what was your favorite show of 2018? I know you've seen everything.
So this is a lot of my favorite shows ended last year or this year. So it's been a, I don't want to say it's a struggle to replace them because there's so much you can watch. The show actually that surprised me the most, and it of course has been canceled already, it's called Alone Together. It's on Freeform, which is what, you know, ABC Family Channel is called now. You know, just being on Freeform, it doesn't seem like it's a show for me, but I really identified with it, and I'm glad they got two seasons out in one calendar year, so that I have that.
Tell us a little bit about that show.
It's basically, it's these two comedians in Los Angeles, one from Los Angeles, very wealthy, the other from the Midwest, and very, very not wealthy. They're best friends, and they're just trying to make it in, not even just in show business. There's very little, you know, trying to actually get work in the show. They're just trying to make it as adults. And that's, I don't know, I just really liked it.
Another show that got a lot of buzz this year, I think, was Homecoming. And
yes,
for a number of reasons, Julia Roberts going to episodic television. The cinematography has been notable. Bob, have you thought much about Homecoming? Is that on your radar?
It is. I watch the, I mean, it's kind of my job, I guess, so I've got to watch these stuff. But, you know, sometimes you feel like you're working when you're watching some of these programs. Not the case in Homecoming. It was really compelling. Julia Roberts was really good in it, and it's one of those shows that kind of took its time being told. I think it was a total of 10 episodes, but you kind of eased into it. I still remember as a kid growing up when you didn't have to watch television. It kind of just completely, it was so completely self-evident what it meant. The old days of The Love Boat and Flying Nuns and Talking Horses and all the rest of it. A lot of this good television, the stuff that we're talking about today, requires an awful lot more engagement and attention. You may not have to turn the lights off, but you have to stay in the same room while you're watching.
That's a great point. And also what you said about the episodes themselves. So 10 half an hour episodes for Homecoming. My colleague Juan and I were talking about, does the television season exist anymore? Certain shows, of course, are 22 episodes, but we're seeing, especially on streaming services, 10 episodes, shorter seasons, a blending of quote-unquote seasons. How is that changing?
Yeah, and it's even happening in broadcast television. Murphy Brown, the big, long-awaited but very disappointing reboot of that, was given 13 episodes, and it didn't go any further. So we're getting some of those limited kinds of things. I think it's been great for television art. I mean, one of the biggest problems TV had back in the old days was simply a matter of the quantity that you had to churn out. Up into the 60s, series had 39 episode seasons. If you buy box sets of shows from the late 50s, early 60s, you get 39 episodes in some of them, and then they go into a 13-week rerun cycle. It was hard to churn that kind of quantity of stuff out. When we think of the great masterpieces, The Wires, The Sopranos, those kinds of programs, 13-episode shows, and they could take their time in between. When The Sopranos felt like going on a 21-month break, they did it. Game of Thrones, we haven't seen a new episode that since, I don't think I was shaving yet when that when that last played.
Well, you mentioned Murphy Brown, and we can talk for hours probably about reboots and revivals, but I only saw the first episode. I did not watch anymore. I don't know how anybody else in this room feels, or we've heard what Bob thinks. But if we were to call that a failure, what were some of the other, you know, not successful shows or failures of this year?
Well, I mean, as far as the reboots go, obviously Murphy Brown was not a success. I even today tried to watch the most recent episode just to see if it had gotten any better. It hadn't.
I was rooting for it, too.
I was
rooting
so
hard.
Too.
I felt like they tried too hard to be nostalgic, and it wasn't terrible, but it just never picked itself up. I feel like Will and Grace by the second season, really, I feel like they've got their stride back, and it doesn't feel like it was off the air, which I feel like is a success. And mm-hmm. I mean, as far as reboots go, my favorite is still One Day at a Time, because season two was even better than season one, even in this political environment.
Amen to that. If that show doesn't get near the attention it should be getting. I mean, it's getting a lot of good attention, but that program, you know, based on this goofy 70s sitcom, is doing some of the most interesting stuff on television today, and in this very stodgy old format of the sitcom 70s style.
I have not seen that. Eric, have you seen that show?
I have not. That was another... I looked this morning just at a list of all of the reboots, the revivals, and there were many shows on there I had no idea had been revived. Some of them I don't think have made it, but that's the key to if you're doing a reboot is one thing, but if you're doing a revival or a sequel to a series, especially as you go older, you have this challenge of making it a modern show while also staying true to the original. This morning I watched a couple episodes of The Conners. I didn't watch the reboot or the revival Roseanne last season, but I figured I needed to know what's going on with The Conners. And they've made it very true to what I remember of the original series, but that means it feels like it's a show set in the early 90s, and it's that sort of comedy, and maybe that's how network TV still is. I don't watch a ton of network comedies anymore, but... I mean, from what I know from the Parks and Recreations and the offices that have been on in the past 15 years, that's not how you're doing TV comedy now.
Well, are they trying to recapture the nostalgia of the 90s? Is that part of it?
I feel like it's definitely part of it, because I feel like the shows that failed completely relied on the nostalgia and didn't adapt and move forward. Like, instead of just using the nostalgia as a leaping point to be like, oh, we're going to bring back this show we want you to watch, they just tried to, you know, keep hitting the nostalgia home, and, you know, it made it not funny, and it's supposed to be a comedy.
Speaking of the 90s, One Day at a Time, Norman Lear is involved in that show, who is in his 90s.
Yeah. Oh.
He, of course, had brought us All in the Family and Maude, and the original One Day at a Time was one of the most influential television producers of all time. I don't think he's showing up to the set every day, but his name is still attached to this.
Well, and I feel like One Day at a Time has that kind of Norman Lear influence, where it's pushing the boundaries without making it the most prime issue of the show. It's still about the family, but they bring up issues in a way that kind of talks about it without talking about it, which was, you know, the way All in the Family was and the original One Day at a Time.
I feel like, though, with nostalgia, we're also seeing a kind of an influx of shows that are set in the past. I mean, it's hard, you know, we had that 70s show and we even had Happy Days before that. But just from the shows that I watched for the first time yesterday, scrolling through my list, I think four of them are not set in the present. And some of them do it really well and then were immediately canceled because they did it really well. And others, I feel like, don't. Everything Sucks is one that's on, it was canceled by Netflix. It's just one season, 10 episodes, but it's so perfectly 90s. It's what I remember the 90s being. The characters are a little bit older than I would have been at the time, but it just does it really well. And The Kids Are All Right is also in the 70s, and that's nominated for a Writers Guild Award and has a full season order already.
The Goldbergs is still on the air.
I love that show.
Set in a different time. And so many of them harken back to, I mean, we've had things set in different times for a long time, all the Westerns, for example. But the real influential sort of well that so many of these go to, it was the Wonder Years, which started in the, late 1980s. I see so much of the genetic material of the Wonder Years in lots and lots and lots of these programs.
I never thought about that. And I am a big Goldbergs fan, but you're right. Thank you. I have to admit, Bob Thompson is my former professor at Syracuse University, so I continue to learn from him beyond school. Thank you, Professor Thompson.
And I went and checked my records. You have no incompletes.
Oh,
you're good.
I want to go back to the concept of nostalgia, because writing for Pace magazine, LaToya Ferguson said, quote, "When discussing reboots, revivals, and everything in between, it's too cynical to blame it all on intellectual property or on creatively and morally bankrupt executives and actors and writers and directors and so on. Just wanting to get rich on the belief that the power of nostalgia and a dedicated fan base alone can truly bring a series back from the dead. On the one hand, the TV industry is a business. On the other, it's a storytelling medium that intentionally evokes these emotions. So to say there's one definitive correct stance on these now unavoidable returns to the television of yore isn't quite so simple. As with any aspect of the medium, from game show formats to genre conventions, revivals and reboots contain endless possibilities for reinvention. The question is whether networks will learn this lesson before our 90s nostalgia goes out of vogue." So that leads me to the question, will it? Will 2019 be the end of the 90s nostalgia?
There's a slim chance, but that's because we're about to hit 2000s nostalgia.
Oh, that's fair. Okay.
I mean, we're right on the edge. These shows are always about 20 years, or they're
that's
going back
exactly
about 20
right.
years, and we're coming up on it.
Okay. Kate.
No, that's exactly right. We got 50s nostalgia in the 70s, MASH and Happy Days. We got 60s nostalgia in the 80s. You're absolutely right. It's on a 20-year cycle. And then, after 40 or 50 years, the nostalgia for those decades goes away because there's nobody left around to be nostalgic for them.
Oh. Well, that's depressing, but true.
Yeah. Well, and as far as the 90s nostalgia and shows, I think one of the best, one of the reboots or actually reimaginings was that I was surprised with was Netflix's Sabrina, you know, from a cheesy Nickelodeon TV show that like was a campy little comedy or whatever to something of an actual TV show with some level of substance was pretty spectacular.
And Sabrina kind of walks the line. Like everyone remembers the 90s. Sabrina series.
Melissa Joan Hart.
But this, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix is apparently, I've not read them, based very heavily and is very true to the original comics from Archie Comics.
Oh.
And then it's, of course, developed by the same person who created Riverdale on the CW, which is also based on the Archie Comics. So it's between the Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Melissa Joan Hart, the animated series that also existed back then, and this, they're all going back to the same source material, but you can't say that one is necessarily a reboot or a revival of the other.
And sometimes, like Sabrina, I think the latest one is better. Remember Battlestar Galactica? That the reboot of Battlestar Galactica was one of the, many people say, masterpieces of American television. It was based on an incredibly stupid show called Battlestar Galactica back in the late 1970s, I guess. So
yeah, that was one of the responses to Star Wars' success, was to get something on TV right away.
Right, exactly. And I think the people of Star Wars sued them, as a matter of fact. I don't think it went anywhere. But I think this complaining about reboots as if there's no other ideas, there's plenty of other ideas. There's all kinds of other shows out there. But these programs that have an identity, I can understand why we want to go back to them. I mean, we keep doing Shakespearean productions year after year after year. Everybody's gone to a production of The Nutcracker over the holiday season. I don't think that necessarily means we're out of ideas or out of things to do.
No, we're just all nostalgic for the 1560s.
Well, maybe that's it.
I think TV gets such a bad rap sometimes. That's a great point. David French on Twitter wrote recently that the Mount Rushmore of modern television is Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, Arrested Development, and Battlestar Galactica. Agree or disagree, Kate?
I would agree. I mean, all of those shows are great. And, like as you said, Battlestar Galactica turned out to be an amazing drama, amazing for a sci-fi show, but like just an amazing drama that people could really get into that happened to have a sci-fi setting. And they really were able to adapt and change that. And Arrested Development is, in my opinion, one of the funniest comedies ever written. So,
mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, those are all milestones. I mean, you can't ignore Seinfeld. This is Evan's show. We have to make sure that's represented. We've seen a lot of some of the best TV shows in the past 15 years. And I mean, looking at lists of the best shows of this year, I saw so many people complaining that there's nothing to watch.
Hmm.
Like, something must be wrong with their TVs if they don't think there's anything to watch.
I think that I had read somewhere, preparing for this, like 520 different scripted television shows available through all the different platforms this, you know, like in the 2018 right. season.
And that's just this season. You have 70 years of recorded content available to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't seen it all.
Bob Thompson, who's on your Mount Rushmore of modern TV?
Well, when I think of talking to critics and the, you know, overall historical, for one thing, most of it is really recent, but also disturbingly, most of it, I would say The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, and Mad Men are generally the ones that are on everybody's list. What's kind of creepy about that, though, is that of the four, three of those are really about just really bad white men, difficult men, as someone wrote a book called that. The Wire was a little different, but for all of the diversity and for all of the new kind of content we're getting, it's interesting how those, some of the shows that are on that list of ones to be taken really seriously, tend to be of a very similar kind of genre. Game of Thrones, I have to defer on that because I think I'm not smart enough for that show. I've seen every episode of that at least twice, probably three times. If you were to give me a quiz right now of the details of Game of Thrones, I'd probably get a C-.
I haven't seen Game of Thrones. My colleague Mona Isler will be ashamed to hear me say that. But
and it's a little much when you have to take notes for a television show because you're not sure. And then they refer to something that was like, and I don't remember who that was. If you did nothing other than watch Game of Thrones, maybe I would get a B on the quiz.
But there is
the three Henry the Sixth plays by Shakespeare I have less trouble with than Game of Thrones.
But you do raise a good point that these are all shows that are about, you know, bad people, to make it simple. And at least in the comedy realm, I think that's a trend that I am done with. I love it on Seinfeld. I love it on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But I just watched a series called You're the Worst. Its last season starts in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And I can't do it anymore.
You can't do comedy anymore.
I can't do bad people anymore.
Oh, bad people. Okay.
I can do good people doing bad things. I can do bad people doing good things. But bad people just being bad, I'm over. I can't
put
up.
Did you watch Barry on HBO?
Oh, Barry.
No, because that we've got these fragmented audiences.
Stay away from that given your new qualifications.
Oh, but Henry Winkler's in that, so... That's a pass.
He got an Emmy.
Henry Winkler can't be bad.
Well, Barry made the list of the New York Times top TV shows of 2018. Along with Killing Eve, they grouped those two together. And everyone looks confused.
I haven't seen either.
The Killing Eve is the British.
Yes, the BBC America show.
Yes, I haven't watched it. I've just heard about it. It's it seemed like a show that was a little heavy at the end of the TV year when I found out about it.
Yeah, I'll have to look up why they paired them together. I think I have it in front of me, unless Bob Thompson knows.
Well, Killing Eve, of course, stars Sandra Oh, who has been quite celebrated in that role, and it's very much anticipated for a second season. Barry was I'm not sure exactly why they paired those two together. Barry was a fascinating Bill Hader, of course, playing this guy who's a hitman, but who happens to stumble into an acting class and decides he wants to become a thespian. And it's like everybody's, the story of everybody when they were bit by the acting bug in sophomore and high school, but if you also happen to be a hitman at the same time. The first season also has a really chilling and interesting ending, which I won't get into.
Oh, I just found why James Poniewozik paired them together at the New York Times. He says, I pair these shows together not to cheat on an extra show to my list, well, maybe a little bit, but because they're two sides of a bloody coin. Both are mordant stories about assassins, and then he describes them each a little bit. But beyond the obvious, these two stories show how some of today's best TV exists in a gray area between genres.
Yeah, well, which is true of practically all the shows that we've talked about, with
Absolutely.
A couple of exceptions.
Absolutely. Before we go to our only break of the hour, I want to talk about SNL. Because every year we hear people say SNL's not funny anymore, nobody watches it. And there's been some talk on Twitter recently about a sketch that aired very recently, the All I Want for Christmas song. I'm not sure if all of you have seen it. We're going to play a clip in just a second. But some people are saying that it's become too left. It's too liberal. It's isolating too many people. And leftist cultural critic Peter Coffin tweeted that it was one of the saddest things he's ever seen, this clip we're about to hear. Matt Denham of Slate called it an example of SNL's toothless political jokes and poor decision-making. Before we hear that clip, is SNL too liberal, everybody? How do you feel about politics on SNL?
It's definitely changed. Early this year, I watched the first five seasons because those are the only seasons available for streaming online until the past couple of years. And they didn't shy away from political stuff, but it was, I mean, you know, Carter was president at the time, so they couldn't, they didn't have a Republican to go after. But they, the political comedy has changed. I think it's changed in the TV landscape entirely, but especially on Saturday Night Live. One of my friends on Twitter has a recurring complaint every single time Alec Baldwin shows up as Trump that you can't do comedy from a place of meanness. And that's actually a Lorne Michaels quote that seems to be ignored every time they bring him on.
No, I would agree, because I feel like that's kind of the point that they were trying to make, is that SNL can be a little bit too on the liberal side and trying to go more for the easy, quick joke than the necessarily the satire that might actually, you know, make someone think about it a little bit more, which I feel like was its old political comedy, where it was kind of, you know, like it was thought-provoking. It was kind of riding the line so that you didn't necessarily offend people, but you were still getting across that, well, this, whatever's happening is kind of ridiculous, you know?
But at the same time, you know, TV is still a business, and they are doing well. Their ratings are up. Shows that are doing similar comedy, Stephen Colbert's ratings are great, especially, you know, go back a couple of years when it was Dave hosting the Late Show. He was not the top, and Steve is. So you kind of have to do what works.
Well, and I don't feel like Stephen Colbert would be on top if we weren't in this current political environment. He kind of faltered going into it a little bit and trying to find his voice coming from playing a character on The Colbert Report. And I feel like with the actual getting into the actual Trump era that we live in helped him find his voice and find what, you know, like what was going to work for him for that type of show.
Well, let's take a listen to this clip. This comes from the female cast members of SNL singing a song about Robert Mueller. Right, two on the nose or okay?
My problem with Saturday Night Live has nothing to do with liberal or conservative or whatever it is. They went after Bill Clinton, of course, who was every comedian's dream come true during a portion of his thing. My problem is that they started out during the election period and the first bit of the Trump administration doing really funny stuff. Now, every single comedian has done this topic. It is impossible to tell a funny Trump joke anymore because it's been done over and over and over again. I agree with that critic. I roll my eyes now whenever I watch Saturday Night Live, but I wasn't rolling them 18 months ago when that show was at its peak in the ratings. They've come down considerably since then. I think now that this topic has just been, there are what, like eight late night people, Saturday Night Live, and a bunch of others on the periphery that are all telling the same jokes. By the way, I watch all the late night openings at the next morning, and oftentimes you get on three or four of them the same exact joke. Not the exact same wording, but the same setup and the same punchline. That's never a good thing for comedy.
I agree. I agree with Kate points about the satire on SNL in terms of where has it gone. SNL having its roots in National Lampoon and Second City and to some extent Groundlings. And everything is so overt now, which sometimes I don't mind, but I think there's so much value in satire. And I think I miss that sometimes. Well, that's just me.
No, I agree. I miss the subtlety of it, of you being able to take your own humor from it rather than you like kind of throw it at me. Like,
right.
This is funny, or you don't think it's funny.
Well, I am very late for our only break of the hour. And don't worry, Rob, I've got you. I'm going to lock our phone. So if you're waiting on the phone, hang with us for just a moment. We're a little short-staffed today. We're going to take our only break of the hour. When we come back, more of your calls, your feedback about the year in television. I'm Megan Mack. Friday on The Next Connections, local students of color are opening up about their views on racism in suburban schools. We'll be joined by some of those students, along with parents and school administrators, to talk about how to create more inclusive school environments. Then in our second hour, how have apps like Tinder changed dating culture? We'll talk about how those apps have become the norm for many people, what the pros and cons are, and how they change romantic relationships. You are listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about the year in television. My guests include Kate Sweeney, Eric Stevens, and Professor Bob Thompson of the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. And joining us for a brief moment is our news director, Randy Gordman. Hi, Randy.
How are you?
Great.
Great topic. I'm running around here, so excuse the scatteredness, but some really excellent shows. Actually, if I ever find time to watch even half of all these shows, I think it'll be great. But I think a lot of folks have time to listen to Connections, whether they're in the car right now or at home. And even if you don't get to listen to the whole thing, maybe podcast it when you're home. It's really one of the many great services that we bring you here at WXXI, part of your public broadcasting station. But we need your help to continue to do this kind of programming. We have a one-day drive today to try to finish out the year on a high note in terms of funding what we need to do for the next year. You can make a call right now, make a pledge at 454-6300. 454-6300, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994, or you can make your pledge online, wxxinews.org, and only this hour you can basically double what you're doing, a dollar-for-dollar match from our good friend Dee Molinari. He's been involved as a volunteer member of the station for many years. That match goes until 2 o'clock, so make that pledge right now, 454-6300. You can double the amount of money you are using to help, again, the station that you depend on for news and information and, of course, Connections with Evan Dawson and, right now, Megan Mack.
Thank you, Randy. Okay. We're going to get back to our phones in just a moment, but first I want to read some of your feedback about your favorite shows from 2018. These are all coming in from Twitter or email. First up on email, Andrew says, Jeopardy rules. Big Jeopardy fan, Andrew. By the way, Ken Jennings just wrote a book on comedy. Has anyone read Ken Jennings' new, I think it's called Planet, oh, I'll have to look it up. Bob, are you familiar with that book? Oh, did we lose Bob Thompson?
Did he read it on comedy?
Yes, he wrote a book on comedy, I think.
What does Ken Jennings know about comedy?
That's what I thought, but I've started reading it, and he walks it back from the beginnings of comedy, and it's called How Comedy Took Over Our Culture. It's called Planet Funny. So, Ken Jennings,
wow.
Jeopardy
that's
champion.
To me. Thank you for pointing that out.
You're welcome. Going back to Twitter, Tracy says her favorite shows are The Walking Dead, The Haunting of Hill House, Ozark, Stranger Things 2. KP says, Pose, hands down, made me cry and laugh every week. Sean Patrick O'Leary says, Big Mouth is his favorite show. Emily says, a Canadian show, which I can't say the first name of, but it's spelled S-C-H-I-T-T-S, Creek. I don't want to get in trouble with NPR. But The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel comes up a lot. The Good Place comes up a lot. I love The Good Place. How does everybody feel about The Good Place?
The Good Place is, I kind of came onto it late, and it's this, and what we talked about, I don't want to watch Bad People. This is a show about bad people, but they're trying not to be bad anymore, and I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Kate, Good Place? Fan?
Yes, I am a fan, and I feel like it's kind of the new comedy. I feel like it's the freshest thing we've seen in situational comedy in a very, very long time, and it's prevalent to where we are now. And, I think it's proving it, especially kind of being on all these lists and everything else, where we're kind of done with that very, that Connors, Murphy Brown style situational comedy, and we need to adapt and change a little bit. And I feel like The Good Place is where we're going.
Michael Schur, I think, is one of the greatest things that's happened to TV comedy in the past 20 years. The Good Place is the latest in a line of shows that includes Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Recreation, The Office, more that I'm probably forgetting already. And they're fresh, they're new, and they don't rely, like you said, on that old Roseanne format.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Good Place proves that network, broadcast, old-fashioned television still has a few tricks up its sleeve.
That makes me so happy. The only time I ever watch television is on Thursday nights. I watch Superstore, The Good Place, and then Will and Grace. And I feel like it's back to must-see TV. Maybe it's just me. I know NBC is trying to recapture that. Is that a lofty goal, Bob, or is that something that could happen? How is it going so far?
Well, it's lofty if we're talking about the age of, you know, Seinfeld and Friends and Mad About You and Cosby and Family Ties. Those were all in that Thursday must-see TV, because we're never going to have a single night where that many people watch because they have too many choices. But no, it's not lofty insofar as a really solid lineup on a network television broadcast is still possible. It might get a third the numbers it would have gotten 20 years ago, but a third the numbers of 20 years ago makes things a hit.
That's fair. Okay.
Great ratings today are terrible ratings 20 years ago.
That's right. In 1979, a show starring, in 1963, a show starring George C. Scott got canceled with a 22 share. A 22 share today would make you the number one program of the week.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So I've read a couple studies and I've seen some numbers about how people are consuming television. Looking at what Fortune has right now, total cable subscriber numbers declined 3.4% over the course of 2017. That's a faster decline than in 2015 and 2016, so more people, quote-unquote, cutting the cord. Meanwhile, in April, Netflix reported it had added a net of 1.96 million subscribers in the first quarter alone. And then Pew goes on to talk about a number of households saying how many televisions they have, but it would not be difficult to give them up. So about 97% of U.S. households have TV sets, but only about a third say it would be difficult to give up those TVs. And the thing that surprised me the most was that the Video Advertising Bureau in September released a report that said millennials are more likely to watch television on broadcast and cable platforms than on streaming services. That really surprised me. What's going on with millennials?
I do not have cable. I watch network television because I can, you know, like you can have an antenna still and get television. and I stream all of my things. But I feel like even all the networks, even NBC and ABC and even the major four, they all have their own streaming platforms that allow you to. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is that it's access with television. You can watch whatever you want, whenever you want, and decide and kind of curate your own. It's no one telling you, like, you should watch Thursday Night Must-See TV. Maybe someone's like, I watch my Will and Grace on Mondays because that's when I have time to stream it. And, like, you don't necessarily get all of them in a row, so.
Mm-hmm. How will we continue to change, Bob, in terms of consumption? What sort of trends are you seeing?
Well, this 2019 is going to be a big year because a lot of people who were cord cutters cut the cord because cable was just too expensive. However, they're replacing it with something else that's going to become equally expensive. Okay, so now you've got to pay if you want to watch all the shows everybody's talking about, you need a Netflix subscription, you need an Amazon Prime subscription, and a Hulu subscription. Amazon to get Mrs. Maisel, Hulu to get Handmaids, and Netflix to get everything else. Now, in 2019, Warner Media will be launching their own streaming service. They have The Big Bang Theory, Harry Potter, all the HBO stuff. Apple is going to be launching its own with lots of original new material. Walmart will be improving its thing. So it's going to get to the point that if you want to get all the shows everybody's talking about, you're not going to need one subscription, Netflix. You're going to need 7, 8, maybe 9. If you want to watch Jordan Peele in the Twilight Zone, you need CBS All Access. And I have a sneaking suspicion that streaming bill is going to start getting awfully close to what the cable bill was that we cut in the first place.
And honestly, some of these new shows that I read about and tried to watch yesterday, like Murphy Brown, for one, I didn't watch because they're not on a platform I have. And I used up my CBS All Access trial a couple months ago for something else. you missed the big one. Disney is coming out with their own platform next
Disney,
year.
Disney, of course. How could I have forgotten that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. So I'm wondering, of our guests, how many streaming services do you use? Eric, how many do you have?
Year-round subscriptions, I have 3. And then others that I start and stop as shows are on that I want.
Okay. Kate?
I have 4.
Okay. Bob?
I have a really killer cable package. I'm still old school in that respect, and I have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon.
Well, you sort of have to have everything, right? That's part of your job, to keep an eye on everything.
No, that is true, but my streaming bill plus my big cable bill is getting to be a let's just put it this way, a major business expense.
Mm.
Let my accountant know I said that when it comes tax time.
We're down to our last few minutes. I want to make sure we get to some of your phone calls. Up first on the phones is Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, I just have a comment and a question. A comment goes back to that Saturday night skit that you were talking about.
Yes.
I thought that was one of the best well-written skits of the year. I really liked it. I even recorded it and have kept it on my DVR machine. It was just very good. And my other question goes back to one of my favorite shows that I saw this year so far was the Murphy Brown reboot, and I was wondering, do your people on there have any comment about the new Murphy Brown show?
Thanks, Steve. They touched on it a little bit, and I think the general consensus is they were not impressed, but that's not to say that's everyone's perspective.
Or CBS makes it hard to watch.
Okay, yeah. Eric couldn't find it, didn't have it on the platform.
I mean, I do have the CBS All Access because The Good Fight is one of the best shows that you can only if you have CBS. Can you watch that show? I did see that.
That is the key to a successful new platform. Disney's platform is going to launch with two brand new Star Wars TV series. So obviously I need to sign up for it.
I'd be interested, Steve, to know if you like the nostalgia of Murphy Brown. So we're just out of time, unfortunately. But thanks for calling in. And I'm sure there are many people out there that do like the Murphy Brown. So I'm sure you're not alone. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
I got an email while we were on the air complaining that I said bad things about Murphy Brown. So I guess we shouldn't have dissed that show so soon.
I think Candace Bergen might be in Rochester.
Up next on the phones is Bonnie. Bonnie, we got to keep it tight.
Yeah. Well, if we have more time, I think it's interesting. It would be interesting for people who are younger to hear some of the really old TV, you know, especially like the Cabot interviewing Steve Allen. There's certain... It's hard to explain those. They're so incredibly good. Not that the current stuff, some of the current stuff isn't fine, but I want a program I used to watch that I don't hear much about, and I hope I have the title right. It's either I'll Fly Away or We'll Fly Away. It's an African-American family and how they deal with issues. And I forget the actress's name. She's wonderful. So I don't hear much about that in any discussion now or what. It's been off the air for quite a while.
Yeah, it's called I'll Fly Away, and it looks like it was on during the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I think 60s, I'm not quite that old, but the 60s.
Oh, no, I'll Fly Away was 80s and 90s, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it was set, I apologize, it was set during the 50s and 60s.
Right, it was set during that period, right, exactly.
Okay. Okay, Bob, any thoughts on I'll Fly Away?
For a long time, it was really hard to get your hands on. It wasn't, it hadn't been released in DVD, I haven't checked lately, but it was... it was kind of a rare rare thing for a while.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bonnie. Thanks for that call. And now, down to our last few minutes, I want to ask our guests what they're excited about for 2019. What's interesting to you? What have you heard about? Is there any reboot or revival that you're excited about, whether they're rumors or not? Kate.
Well, I don't know if I'm excited about it, but NBC is releasing in the realm of reality TV show something about people dressed up in costumes singing, and I literally thought it was a joke for an entire month. Like, I saw it, like, quickly on, like, social media feeds and stuff, and I was like, oh, this is obviously a joke. It is not, and I feel like it might be a very sad moment for network television in America with this show coming up, so...
The Masked Singer.
Yes. The Masked Singer.
Oh.
I mean, I'm going to watch it, but probably, I'm not sure how long, but I will watch the first episode because I can't believe it's a real thing.
Is that on Fox or NBC?
NBC.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Kate. We'll have to check back in with you and see how you like it. Eric.
When Disney bought Lucasfilm a few years ago, they cut Star Wars The Clone Wars short, and that has been picked up. They're going to finish off what they had intended to do a few years ago, so I'm very excited for that on Disney Plus's network. But I'm looking for anything that Amy Poehler produces. She is propelling a lot of talented people, especially women, to at least one season of success. And so far, I've loved every single one of them. So I want to see whatever she has next.
There was a Parks and Rec reunion planned for, is it the summer? I'm not sure. It's for Paley Fest 2019. Are there rumors of a Parks and Rec revival or no? Is that too optimistic?
No, I think they're just celebrating the 10 year. Because that show did propel a lot of people to stardom too. I mean, many of them have their own series now. Chris Pratt is obviously a movie star now. But Parks and Rec got a 7th season, and that was the reunion. That was set in the future, and that's all you need.
Okay, fair. Bob, what about you? What's exciting in 2019?
I loved the HBO show Deadwood, which has been off the air since 2006, and they're coming back with a movie that's going to, on HBO, that's going to kind of wrap up where they left us in the lurch before. And then Hulu is doing a 6-episode miniseries based on Catch-22. So those are my ones I've got on the calendar.
Cool, very cool. I have to ask, there are rumors about a Frasier reunion. Is that going to happen? How do we feel about a Frasier reunion? I love Frasier, but I feel like don't touch what's not broken.
I'm seeing the faces in the studio. I'd watch it, but
I think we've done enough. A couple of them have hit, a couple of them have missed. Let's call it a day with trying to bring back the 90s television.
And Frasier, of course, is missing one of its lead actors now.
Yeah, John Mahoney
I don't think that's possible.
Okay. Bob, Frasier reunion?
I agree. I think it's missing one of its key players. And if you want to watch Frasier, watch the old episodes. Yeah. They're really good.
They are. Well, I'd like to thank all of my guests, Kate Sweeney, Eric Stevens, and Professor Bob Thompson. And thank you all for sharing your opinions about television. More Connections tomorrow. In the meantime, enjoy TV.